That is a really gorgeous voice.
Yes.
Isn't it? Yours. So one time the Dalai Lama was visiting an elementary school in Vancouver, and the kids were in a gratitude circle, which they had done many times. So the Dalai Lama, of course, sat on the floor with them, joined them in the circle. The kids passed a talking stone from hand to hand as their gratitude zoomed around the room. "I'm grateful," they said, "to be alive, to meet the Dalai Lama, for the ocean, for peace in the world, for my family, for sports." When the rock reached the Dalai Lama, he paused and then told the children, "We're basically all the same in a big human family. When we meet, we find we have the same emotions, same mind, same body. We all love the same things, like friendship." Then he looked at the rock in his hand and he added, "I'm grateful for joy," and handed the rock to the next child. So what he told the kids, "We're all one big human family," has been his message to every person he's met around the world, every audience, every news conference, every book. This is the second in a two-part series about the Dalai Lama based on the book A Force for Good by Daniel Goleman, a psychologist who's best known for EQ, emotional intelligence. So when we left off last week, we knew that the Dalai Lama believes all the world's problems could be solved with compassion, with true understanding of our oneness. It starts with each individual and then it moves outward. But how does each individual learn it? How do we bring about changes we want to see in the world? The Dalai Lama calls it education of the heart. And he means a literal education. And it's beginning to happen. He says the enemy is our own destructive emotions, and we can't deal with them until we can name them. So he says what we need is a map of emotions, a way to navigate through them and understand them, then we can start to manage them. Well, a psychologist named Paul Ekman took him up on that and created a map of emotions. Paul Ekman is best known for the concept, maybe most popularly known for the concept of microexpressions, that tiny changes in your facial expression and body language can reveal what you're really thinking. There was a TV show called Lie to Me, based on him. And in this show, a consultant like Paul Ekman would be hired, usually by law enforcement, to watch videos of people being interrogated, and he could tell who was lying and who wasn't. It was a good show. So Paul Ekman made a map of emotions for the Dalai Lama. He calls it an atlas of emotions. There's a gorgeous website, atlasofemotions.org. Based on five universal emotions, anger, fear, disgust, enjoyment, and sadness. And then each has subsets, and then each has means of expression, the way they show up in people. Under enjoyment, did you know there's actually a word for the joy you feel taking pride in your children? I think it's nachas. It's Yiddish. Where's Stanley Tartikoff when we need it? There you are. Is it nachas?
Nachas.
Nachas. Nachas. You've got to get that in your throat. Nachas. So next time you're bragging on your kids, you are feeling nachas. Paul Ekman works with a meditation teacher named Alan Wallace, and together they created a program, Cultivating Emotional Balance, combining modern psychology with Tibetan contemplation. Ekman's daughter Eve works with them, so she took this program into Soledad Prison in California. This is all based on a comment from the Dalai Lama that, you know, what we need is a map of emotions. It's become this huge thing. So Eve worked with 60 inmates, many of them older, who'd been there a long time. And she had them create an emotional timeline of their lives. Not surprisingly, it nearly always started with not feeling loved, not wanted. But they were surprised and delighted to learn that they have some choice about how to feel. And they were really thrilled with the idea that destructive emotions like anger can be channeled for good. They also learned how to breathe, be in the present moment. And in guided contemplation, they would ask themselves four questions that really any of us could consider. What would it be like for me to attain genuine happiness? What would I need from the world to achieve this? What would I need from myself? What habits would I need to learn? And how could I bring this to the world and be of service? Paul Ekman and the Dalai Lama have written two books together. But Ekman's not the only one to be inspired. Another remark the Dalai Lama made was that countries should be measured by the gross national happiness. So a movement was created called Action for Happiness with the Dalai Lama as its patron. Excuse me, Oak. Based on a quote from him, happiness is not something ready-made, it comes from your own actions. So Action for Happiness groups are mostly in the United Kingdom, and they take a pledge to do whatever they can to create happiness wherever they are, work, schools, communities. And they also ask questions. What really matters in life? What makes us happy? How can we create a happier world? Their website has 10 keys to happier living that you can look up. Action for Happiness. Then there's Richard Davidson, a professor of psychology and psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin. The Dalai Lama loves neuroscience and scientists. He says he finds them more open-minded than religious people. He loves their impartiality, that their work is not based on faith or nationalism. So Richard Davidson in Wisconsin, inspired by the Dalai Lama, created the Center for Investigating Healthy Minds. And again, what does it take for us to be happy, to feel compassion, to overcome destructive emotions? So Davidson is developing a kindness curriculum for preschoolers, and these little kids take a kindness pledge. May all I think, say, and do not hurt anyone and help everyone. And they practice calmness. I love this. They lie on their backs. They put their favorite stuffed animal on their bellies. And then they just focus on the animal rising up and down as they breathe. Three-year-olds. More and more schools have programs like this. A middle school in New Haven has a program about how to handle bullying. And I want to read you this story. It's a little longer than I usually read, but it just stuck in my mind. Three boys were heading to gym class, where they would play soccer. One, a bit pudgy and unathletic, was the target of ridicule by two others walking behind, both jocks who excelled at soccer. One of the jocks said, his voice dripping with sarcasm, "Oh, so you're going to play soccer?" At that, the pudgy fellow stopped, took a deep breath as though bolstering himself for a nasty encounter, turned and said, "Yes, I'm going to play soccer. I'm not very good at it. What I'm good at is art. Show me anything and I can draw it real well. You're really great at soccer. Someday I'd like to be as good as you." Hearing that, the youngster who'd been so sarcastic changed his tone and said warmly, "Oh, you're not so bad. Maybe I can show you a few moves that will make you better." And he put his arm around the pudgy kid in friendship as the two walked together to gym class. What happened there is a simple technique. You say something positive about the other person and something positive about yourself. "You're good at soccer, I'm good at art." It's a put up in response to a put down. The Dalai Lama says, this is what schools need. He says academic achievement is not a complete education. We need to add ethics and compassionate values, how the mind works, how to regulate emotions, how to cultivate attention, empathy, caring, how to handle conflicts, and a sense of oneness with humanity. Wouldn't you have loved to learn that in school? Yes. He believes that kind of education could solve problems from global warming to war to economic disparity. No doubt, this is me talking, not him. No doubt parents think they are instilling values in their children, but it's got to be some of those same children who grow up to be the polluters and the economic ransackers and the ones who believe war is a solution. The Dalai Lama doesn't blame parents. He says the current education system promotes a sense of separation from each other, competition, I've got to win and I've got to get mine. So listen to what he told high school students in Canada. He said, I've had the opportunity to meet lots of different kinds of people, leaders, beggars, respected scientists, and spiritual practitioners. I'm convinced a happy life is not dependent on being wealthy or even having a good family. I listen to the BBC every day. The news tells me there's lots of pain in our world, lots of problems and violence. These problems are man-made, and the people causing them are often smart. Yikes, even smart people cause problems. Capitalism is one of the examples he gives. Smart people who just need to start feeling more compassion. He says, our financial system rewards greed and ignores the cost to people and the planet. Businesses may be more powerful in shaping our lives than government or religion. We have poverty alongside conspicuous consumption. A country's GDP might be high, but it might only reflect enormous wealth for a few people. The Dalai Lama does prefer the idea of socialism because it has more equal distribution, but he says it's not practiced anywhere the way it was proposed. Ideally, it's a balance of altruism and freedom. He says Sweden comes close, but an economy based on compassion could overcome disparities in wealth. That said, the Dalai Lama doesn't really understand wealth. When he was told that the number of the world's billionaires was increasing, he said, why would anyone want that much money? You only have one stomach. And he keeps saying money doesn't make you happy, which again, the Dalai Lama can back up with research. He loves it when he can do that. Richard Layard at the London School of Economics says happiness is more about personal relationships than income. Income accounts for just 1% variation in happiness. Dalai Lama says we're happier with kindness, affection, trust in family and friends than with luxuries. But you can have both. And he loves hearing about businesses that are making money while doing good. The Grameen Bank and its microloans. Greyston Bakery in Yonkers makes a point of hiring former homeless people, addicts, inmates, people on welfare, battered women, illiterate people. Greyston Bakery makes all the brownies for Ben and Jerry's chocolate fudge brownie ice cream. Zillions of brownies. $10 million a year. And the company's motto is, we don't hire people to bake brownies. We bake brownies to hire people. The Dalai Lama loves hearing things like that. He says, the global economy is like a roof over all of us, but it depends on individual pillars for support. World peace as well depends on individuals. We may not be involved in geopolitics, but in our own lives, we can choose dialogue over conflict. The Dalai Lama says the world needs about a century of dialogue. And of course, we won't all agree. He's not saying you should give up your own needs. He says dialogue is a way to defend your values, not compromise them. But that what divides us when we're in conflict is more superficial than the basic humanity we share. Martin Luther King said the same thing. He said, we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. The Dalai Lama says, us and them is not a religious belief, although people have used religion to justify self-centeredness. When religions are divisive, he sees a lack of moral principles. It all starts within. It keeps coming back to the individual. You know the word jihad means combating your own destructive emotions, restraining yourself from harming anyone. The Dalai Lama says, I respect Islam. They're good philosophers, and it's a very important religion. He also puts great stock in women. In 2009 at the Vancouver Peace Summit, he famously said, the world will be saved by Western women. He says, we need leaders with sensitivity to human needs, concern for others, warm hearts. He believes women are more biologically attuned to the suffering of others, and that is the essence of compassion. If I met him, I would argue it's not just women, and he is the best example of that. So he talks about compassion. He talks about the way the world could be. He continues to inspire people to make changes in the education of the heart. Victor Chan is a Canadian physicist. He's known the Dalai Lama for decades. They've written two books together. Chan heard the Dalai Lama speaking about educating the heart, and he founded the Dalai Lama Center for Peace and Education to take social and emotional learning into the schools. By 2013, 90% of the schools in British Columbia had such programs, and the University of British Columbia now offers a master's degree in it. There are more than 100 curriculums now around the world to teach what the Dalai Lama would call emotional hygiene. He wants it to be as natural as brushing your teeth, solving your problems with dialogue. He pictures SEL, social and emotional learning, being offered from preschool through college. And he hopes kids will go home and tell their parents, "Talk, don't fight." He told an audience at Princeton, "Keep your high academic standards and add some warm-heartedness." Princeton now is one of the universities that offers a Dalai Lama fellowship for college students who want to design and launch projects for compassion in action. The Dalai Lama was born in 1935. He's 81. The 20th century that he's lived through had war after war. Did you know 200 million people died in hostilities in the 20th century? And he believes we're all just sick of it. He's optimistic over the long term, but he expects the next few decades will continue to be difficult as we compete for resources with a booming population. He says, "Sometimes we feel all the world's problems are huge, but who creates these problems? Humanity is only a collection of individuals, so change must come from each of us. I myself, also one of the 7 billion human beings. So I have both moral responsibility and the opportunity to make a contribution, which starts at the mental level with fewer destructive emotions, more constructive ones. Then share with friends, anyone we can. Change spreads that way. Ultimately, each individual has responsibility. That's the only way to bring about this change." Even Jesus didn't change the whole world, but he was one individual who made a difference. So were Buddha and Gandhi, so is the Dalai Lama. He believes the spreading compassion, the individual changes, will coalesce or reach a tipping point when all of us together are creating a better world. He takes a very long view, and I suppose that's not surprising if he really is the same soul who has incarnated into 14 Dalai Lamas through the centuries. And he says things are already so much better. We can take for granted universal education, no slavery, a worldwide response to disasters, instant access to all the world's knowledge. And per capita, far fewer people are killing each other than in the past several thousand years. He believes Tibetans can teach the world about harmony and peaceful coexistence. We can start now to focus more on solutions than on what's wrong. We can educate our hearts for compassion and then radiate those changes into the world like ripples in a pond. And by the way, the Dalai Lama says it's selfish to want to see results for your efforts. You're doing this for the next generation. So let's take those thoughts into meditation with Melinda.
Take a moment, if you will, to get comfortable where you are. To breathe deeply. Just imagine your favorite teddy bear on your chest right now, on your abdomen. And just watch it gently rise and fall. We are one. That is the Dalai Lama's message. We are one human family. We are one. That was the message of Jesus the Christ. And the way to have dialogue between these many parts who are actually one, I believe, is curiosity. When we are having feelings of anger, angst, of fear, of doubt, of self-pity, to have a dialogue with ourselves. What is this feeling? Where does it come from? What would I need to change in order to alter that feeling and to bring joy to my own heart? So ask yourself that in this moment. What would it take to erase the fear that you carry? I ask myself, what would it take to erase my worry? What would it take to turn my anger into action and my despair into joy and my disgust into understanding? You don't have to have the answer right now. I think the important thing is to ask the question on a daily basis, in the silence. Ask the question. And when we can ask that question of ourselves, we can begin to express that curiosity to others. When we have judgments, when we have fears, when we are angry or frustrated or disgruntled, what would it be like if instead of immediately expressing our truths, if we instead reached out in curiosity to ask another his truth? We don't even have to do it with a person in front of us necessarily. We can do it right now in our mind's eye by holding someone with whom we have discord. And asking that person in our mind right now, what is causing this fear, this anger? What is this action? This harmful action, or the action that I judge as harmful, where is that coming from? And then to listen. This becomes a natural extension of listening to our own selves, to listen to others, and to realize what the Dalai Lama said with the talking stone in his hand, which is that to talk to another, to find out about another, is to find out about ourselves. We are not different. In truth, we are not many. There's only one of us here. There's only one of us here. This is the message of unity. So I invite you, as you come back to this room, to have a plan in your heart for the day. for how you will bring joy to yourself and for how you will extend enough curiosity that you might bring or at least understand the joy of another. Alleluia.